August 11th, and you are listening to GenTech, Teaching and Learning with Generative Technology. This is show six, I believe. GenTech is a term that I think Michael coined, at least for my purposes, that describes tools that really allow for student-created content. If you look back at some of the software that's been in education traditionally, you see a lot of things that are typically referred to as drill and kill software. We think about GenTech as the alternative to traditional educational software. GenTech includes programs that you can install on your computer like iMovie or Windows Movie Maker. And I think about it also as including Web 2.0 software like Writely or Gliffy, Impressor. The GenTech podcast is a weekly conversation. And usually we focus on a particular tool or trend and how it can be used educationally. My name is Steve Whitaker. I'm on the faculty at the Curry School of Education at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville.
I'm Mark Hofer. I'm faculty at the College of William & Mary.
And I'm Michael Kelly. I'm a second-year doctoral student at the University of Virginia.
So you guys doing okay with the heat?
Well, heat? Lovely. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. All right. I should have even
asked
you. Why did I even bring that up? Opportunities to gloat.
Yeah, Michael is summering in Michigan. Yes. I love that word, summering. I want to summer somewhere.
Do you remember that scene in L.A. Story where they're trying to get into the swank restaurant and Patrick Stewart says, "Where do you summer?" Where do I summer? I love that. I think it was called Lidio. On last week's show, guys, we spent some time talking about podcasting and focused primarily on the technical side of it, primarily because I think it's important to go into any conversation about podcasting and education with at least some understanding of what's involved in it. And it wouldn't be entirely accurate to say that there's no threshold that you've got to cross to be able to podcast. There's a little bit that anybody would have to learn. But I think with Mark and Michael, you guys talked about Audio Studio last week. And I think with that, that's about as simple as you can get. So I don't see the technical as a barrier, really. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not.
I would agree.
Not, or certainly not much.
Yeah. So I think it makes sense to focus today on how podcasts might be used in the classroom. And we're at a point right now where I believe that podcasts are becoming increasingly used in educational settings, in K-12 settings especially. But I don't know if we have much research that shows how effective or how much of a difference they can make. And yet we're seeing some really great content that's out there. So I wanted to start with a question just to ask you guys. Do you guys see podcasts as just the successor to educational radio or television?
Yes and no. I think they are in the sense of they're kind of at one aspect of it is one way. I mean, it's passive. It's something that can be listened to.
You mean it's delivered to someone?
It's delivered to. It can be. I would say no, because as we've seen, there's the whole other side of production that I don't think existed in traditional educational radio and TV, and that's opened up a whole new exciting area, I think, for student-generated and teacher-generated podcasts.
I mean, Unlike a radio show, for example, students can actually create podcasts that will be every bit as real or authentic as some of the other shows that are out there.
Exactly.
How about you, Mark? Do you see podcasting as just? I guess what I'm wondering is this just sort of the next big thing that will kind of burn out eventually, or is this something different?
I think it depends partly on how you approach it. I think of some of the shows that I like and some of the shows that I listen to more regularly are, you know, they're produced in a way that it is sort of one or several or, you know, a couple of people to many. Mm-hmm. You know, they're pre-recorded, of course, and they're structured and so on. But I think with the fact that a lot of these are hosted via blogs and things like that, there is opportunity for interaction. And I think that some of the shows that I tend to like to listen to incorporate reader comment or listener comments, suggestions, they'll do interviews. So it is a little bit more, I don't know if democratic is the right term, but it is more sort of an open community rather than, you know, something created in a studio, you know, maybe well advanced, you know, without any sort of or very little thought maybe about the needs of the listeners.
Michael,
the,
you said something very similar to that yesterday, as a matter of fact, about the idea that a podcast doesn't just have to be a delivered good with nothing after that. But, you know, you talked about how you can make it more democratic, and I think that's the word you use too, by encouraging comments and feedback. And
Well, Michael is smart like that.
Yeah, he's a revolutionary kind of guy.
But it's exactly what Mark was getting at. It's the context and it's the connection in different ways to people and something that's happening right now and responding to more immediate circumstances
and
next stuff.
I think an important thing, at least for me, when I'm considering podcasting or really any generative tool, is that it doesn't have to be revolutionary to make a difference. If you look at podcasting, there is that tradition, at least, in bringing content into the classroom in terms of radio and television. And certainly there have been student projects in the past where, and I did these, where you have students create their own radio show, their own television show that they just do in the classroom or even videotape. But, I think one of the real strengths, or several of the strengths of podcasting, is that they are free. I think the asynchronous nature of them is important. Unlike real live radio, you can listen to a podcast whenever it's convenient for you, and you can listen to it over and over again. I think the term that's used now is time shifting, which always sounds like something other than what it really is. But time
shifters.
Podcasts are increasingly easy to find. They're relatively short. And Mark, something that you'd mentioned last week is that they are episodic in nature.
Right.
But each show can be seen in some cases as a standalone also. So if you wanted to bring podcasting, if you wanted to have your students listen to podcasts, you wouldn't need to commit them to a 12-episode run of a given show.
Right.
Go ahead.
And that's, you're talking about control. I mean, and that's, I think, something that comes up in this generative discussion of this idea of control that users have over what they're learning, what they're using, what they're doing.
That's right. And importantly, I think there's also control in the sense that an instructor or a teacher has some control over what students are doing still.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a strength of podcasting. You can have students listen to very particular pieces of a given show or particular episodes too. And we're talking about listening right now, that receptive idea. And there really is some amazing podcast content that's out there. And I'm just gonna throw out an idea. You tell me if this sounds right or not. But to me, as I'm thinking about the different reasons you might have students listen to podcasts, there are several kind of categories. And one is just this idea of listening to content, something like lectures or programs that expose students to new content or new facts. And something like Science Friday comes to mind. NPR puts a podcast of Science Friday up there. And that follows that one-to-many, or as Mark said, the several-to-many focus. But I also think you can have students listen to podcasting for practice or exposure to something, especially in the areas of language. And then review of things that are happening in class, for example. So I might have students listen to recordings of what we actually did in our classroom and let them review that for whatever reason, whether it's before a test or whether they have a particular learning need that really sort of demands that they hear something several times. I just wonder if that's one way to approach the way podcasts can be brought into the classroom.
Absolutely.
A big way, and those three things are can go a long way.
Are there particular shows that you guys listen to? One of the shows that I'm always thinking about is Room 208. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Bob Sprenkel does a show where he has his own students create a podcast, and we'll talk about the creating side momentarily. But it's a good show to listen to also because it does provide educational content. They do some work with math, and they do some reviews and
vocabulary,
right?
Interesting facts.
Absolutely. I think that's a great example. Some, they really are trained to teach as they create their podcast. So I think it does have a lot of educational listening value. And, you've got other things like Colonial Williamsburg has just recently, entered into this field. And it just seems like each week they've got something really new and interesting and very high quality, publicly available. I think there is, I think that's the area. I think it started, this is me talking out of complete ignorance, but this is my impression, is that it started with, people that always wanted their own radio show, and they wanted to play their own music or they wanted to have a soapbox or whatnot, which is fine. And I think a lot of the original podcasts were along those lines. And then it maybe has more recently shifted to people wanting to share understanding and teach, I guess, via this medium.
Right. No, I think you're right, and that's sort of shifted now. And some, I mean, and those podcasts still exist, but I think that's also shifted now to people more formally creating content for educational purposes. And one driving force I see behind that now is iTunes U. Have you guys heard of iTunes U?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Stanford's got just some terrific lectures online. And I can imagine having a group of students, whether in class or on their own time, listening to some of the content that's up there, you know, listening to a half-hour lecture on a particular topic that maybe we started to cover in class, but that was of interest to enough students that they might want to do some extracurricular work. That could be homework even.
Right. Absolutely.
But
you know, even thinking about something like what Colonial Williamsburg and a lot of other museums are doing, where they have the MP3 players, you know, that people can rent or borrow as they're walking through the museum to listen to, you know, explanations of different things, so on. But also to extend that to, that might be a way for those types of organizations to lure people in, to create content specifically as podcasts, to engage people and say, wow, I want to go visit and, you know, and follow up with this. So I think you are starting to see both from sort of formal education side as well as other sort of nonprofit educational organizations creating these kinds of podcasts.
And it's that creation side that's really exciting to me in a classroom. I mean, I think as important as podcasts are and as useful as they can be by having your students listen to them, to me it's the idea of actually creating content, creating podcasts in a classroom that could be a very exciting trend.
And I agree.
You know, it seems like there are two ways that could go. Teachers can create podcasts, and I mentioned a minute ago the idea of recording lectures or discussions that happen in class. Which students can then review as study aids, or, you know, you think about a student who misses class, he's out with chicken pox. And there you go. There's some content that this student can listen to. It's not the same as being in the room, of course, but it is another way to get it content that might otherwise just have to be read through a friend's class notes or looked at, you know, read in the textbook or something.
Yeah, or the you know, the 2-minute explanation the teacher tries to give the kid when they come back to school.
In between the bells, you know, right, or before.
Exactly. So, you know, I think there's, it seems like sort of a low-level use, but yeah, it's probably a very, very practical use.
And more practical maybe for the teachers in some ways, too, because I'm, you know, certainly when I was teaching, Mark, I'm sure you had that same, you had a student who'd been out for 3 or 4 days for whatever reason, and it's hard to find the time during the school day to try to catch them up, and you feel badly for not being able to.
Exactly. I totally agree.
So it would be great if you could point that student to something that you'd recorded and then let her listen to it, come back with questions later on.
Right.
But, you know, where I really want to focus for just a minute is this idea of student-created content. And there's some good examples of it out there. We talked about Room 208 a minute ago, and we'll definitely post a link up to that. But that's third and fourth graders creating their own podcasts.
Oh, and they do, too. It's really interesting. That, in, again, for me, I'm pretty excited about the student-created aspect because I find it, you know, there's so much in process and in the prep work. Like we mentioned last week, you know, we spend a lot more time on these shows, you know, preparing for them than you know, the actual production, and that's, you know, for me, a lot of the learning happens as well.
Yeah, you know, I think the production and the recording is the payoff for all of the hard work that students do as they're preparing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and while they're preparing, of course, they're learning, they're being exposed to content, they're having to structure their thoughts and present them in a formal way. But then they get this bonus, especially I'm thinking of like 8 and 9 year old kids getting to send to their parents a link of them, you know, quote unquote, on the radio, or here's my
they
podcast.
Have a show.
And, you know, he has them present at conferences.
Yeah.
So what a great reward for learning.
Yeah, when I saw that they went to Maine, I think.
Yeah, right,
somewhere,
exactly.
And I thought, you know, how cool is that? Here's this, you know, this flip from the traditional sort of, you know, we're the adults at the presenter of the conference and we're talking about this that eventually may trickle down to the kids. But here are the kids presenting, you know, to the educators, and it was this really nice intergenerational thing.
And that's a great show, too, to listen to have an understanding of the, you know, really rich process that they go through in creating their weekly show. And in the kids' words, and, you know,
right.
You can tell that, you know, it was kind of scripted and so on, which is fine.
It is,
you still do hear it. You can tell that they were the ones that designed the presentation, and they have a really good understanding of not only how they do what they do, but also in a lot of cases why they're doing.
And one of the things that I really like about this is that there are mistakes in there, and you can if you listen to some of the early ones, the kids were flustered when they made mistakes, but as time went on, they kind of skimmed over them. And and I think that's a great lesson to learn, is that, you know, you don't have to sound perfect all of the time. but they also sound more confident as time goes on. So it's, right. it's a great exercise in, like I said, in putting content together and organizing it and presenting it in a formal way, and also getting that practice that I think is important for anybody, which is to be able to present to a larger audience.
Right.
And, you know, I think the kind of work they're doing is a perfect synergy between content, you know, that they need to understand in order to teach, you know, the math lesson or the math activity or whatever, process in terms of the writing and editing and revisions and so on, as well as a lot of those sort of higher level thinking skills, 21st century skills about communicating and so on, that it really is an ideal and very natural synergy between all those different aspects.
It is, and I'd add...
So you say, you know, this takes a lot of time in the class, but look at all of the things you're doing simultaneously.
And I'd add to that, you know, the tool itself that has sort of made that possible in a way that, that previously would have been not as easy to do or not even possible. Just, yeah, exactly, Mark. And, you know, as you listen to those things, you can tell. And I think the reason that Room 208 is probably becoming visible is because it is good. There is quality there. He's not just hitting record and leaving the room for a few minutes. But he's,
and I think to add to that, it's a regular commitment.
Right.
They, you know, rarely do they miss a week. There are a lot of different education, you know, like kid-produced podcasts out there that are very, you know, they did three shows and then they're gone.
Yeah, and
or, you know, it's every 3 weeks, or, you know, where they are really, they've made a real commitment to it.
Well, and he's, I think that marries the idea of the episodic nature of podcasting. I can see a lot of the tools that we're talking about on this show as sort of one time or maybe twice a year projects because of the overhead and the prep work. But the way he's done this, I'm sure there's preparation. I'm sure there's a lot of preparation, but it certainly can't take so much time out of his classroom that everything else is suffering.
Right. Well, and again, I think it's because they're doing all those different things. They're, you know, there's a lot of learning incorporated in the production of one of these podcasts.
They're really using that podcast as an opportunity to expand on some of the concepts that they've talked about in class, as well as to generate some new ideas of their own when they do the reviews and things like that. But I also think there's something to be said for using podcasting as an opportunity for students to summarize or even re-present topics that were covered in class. And maybe this is more important as students get a little bit older. But I can imagine each week having two or three students being responsible for sort of a small round table about one of the key topics in class, producing a show around it, and then having the other students in the class listen to that. So it's another voice to present content.
Well, and I think it hits the two highest levels of the, you know,
the
learning
taxonomy,
pyramid.
That's right.
You know, where you know, practice by doing, you're supposed to remember 75% of what you learn, and teaching others, you know, 90%.
Right.
So, you know, I think if you look at those two things in terms of durability of learning, I think a podcast is a great opportunity to hit those two, which, you know, are honestly difficult to do otherwise in the classroom.
You give a man a podcast or teach a man to podcast.
Exactly. You got it, Steve.
So there's some interesting – go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
Well, just that it's a difficult thing to do because what you're talking about is, you know, teaching. So you're sort of switching roles in a superficial way. And without this notion of creating a show or you know, being on the radio, that's sort of teaching, you know, kind of undercover a little bit. You know, you're not saying, okay, now you're the teach, go teach this other person explicitly, but let's produce a show and let's, you know, it works in there. And I think it's that enables that students to take on that role, which puts them up into that higher end.
Right. Once you become responsible for teaching something, it really changes the way you receive it. Yeah.
And, you know, and it goes so much beyond doing a presentation for your classmates. You know, the kids in, you know, Bob Sprankle students, they know that there are people from every state and a lot of other countries that are listening every week to what they're doing.
Right.
And that just raises the bar so much compared to, you know, me standing in front of the class with a poster board or even a PowerPoint and talking to my classmates. You know, that's not lost on them.
No, it's
and
not.
That's an important benefit.
I think it would also drive in those weeks where maybe, God, they just really don't feel like doing it. They have to remember that they have this audience and maybe feel a little bit more of a responsibility or an obligation. And what a neat thing for a student of 8 years old to be able to do, to say, you know, I have to do my podcast this week.
Absolutely. And they structure it so that, you know, each student has a different role and that role shifts each week.
That's right.
So it's like, you know, from 1 week to the next, you know, I might be doing audio mixing 1 week, and I might be the presenter of a show the next.
It's a great way for them to have exposure to different, you know, different roles as the time goes on, and also for them probably not to get bored doing the same thing.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of Radio Willow Web?
Radio Willow Web, I have not heard of.
It's out in Nebraska. Same kind of thing. Radio for kids, by kids. Another good example of some well-produced, student podcast radio show.
They also
link out to some other examples, and other shows, different classes, and it's more of a web, another good.
You said that's elementary school again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Put a link up to that.
But they have, you can see. I'm sorry, Mike.
Grades? No, go ahead.
No, please.
I was just going to say that it's a web from the school, and they have different teachers in their classes and kind of a broader webcasts and student generated websites and a pretty big package, and the radio aspect is a feature component. Again, just another good example.
Sure.
of what students and teachers are doing out there.
And a different enough example, I think, that it you can look at two different ways to approach this.
One of the things go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, these are, it's no accident that these are both elementary school podcasts.
No, it's not. That's absolutely.
And I think that's something to acknowledge. There are some high school and middle school podcasts, but the fact that, Bob Sprinkle has these kids probably all day, I assume,
right.
And multiple content areas and so on, is enables station kind of work where kids are doing different things and so on. This would be a little trickier. I've been working with one of my former students who's going to be a Spanish teacher in high school, and we've been thinking about how she can do this to have her students create a podcast and so on. And it's a little bit trickier, I think, in that context to do this kind of work.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not impossible, but
time alone,
it's not as natural.
And time's going to get in the way of that too, unless you're really at a good block scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely, and even a block schedule, you might meet just twice a week.
That's exactly right.
So,
but at least you've got a little bit longer
Each
time, which I think is going to be important. I mean, the prep would take a little bit of time up, and probably the wrap up too, but not, I wouldn't imagine too much. And before we go, one of the things that I wanted to ask is, anybody who's listening out there doing a podcast or knowing, who knows of a podcast that's created by students, please send it our way. We'd like to put it up as a link in the show notes. And, just speaking personally, I love to listen to some of the great podcasts that are out there being created by students.
Me too.
So what's on the agenda for next week?
Web safety.
Web safety is a good conversation to have, given things like DOPA and some of the other political wranglings, the conversations that have been in the news about MySpace. So, yeah, I think next week we can talk a little bit about what it means to be safe on the web. We'll put some resources out there and talk a little bit about some things that I think any educator and any student should know when they're going online in this new collaborative read-write web. So, guys, thanks very much. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
Likewise.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Adios.
Bye.
Bye.